everybody, and welcome to the only movie podcast ever invented, created, recorded, etc., etc. Viewing Angles. I'm your A-host, Dan Leo, and with me, as always,
the B-host, Robert Mecki.
Woo! All right, we're going to get right into this shit right now. Box office numbers are kind of hilarious. This is good. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, $35 million, which is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
I'm very happy to see.
But Venom made more.
Yeah, Venom made like twice as much.
Yeah. Three times
and
as much almost.
This is a lot better than Venom.
So
I'll say
much
it.
Better.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about the first two movies on the box office list, which I knew we'd be talking about them, but I didn't realize they were going to be one and two on the box office list. Very surprised. So Spider-Man, number one. Number two is The Mule, Clint Eastwood vehicle / directorial, blah, 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 blah. The weekend grossed $17 million. Pretty good on a budget of 50. I'll take it.
What the fuck? This movie cost $50 million?
Yeah, no, it was all the ass montage.
Yeah, man, dude, my favorite scene in this movie is when Clint Eastwood eats his own ass.
Callbacks. No, they probably spent the most money. I bet that was real cocaine, first of all. And yeah. I bet that helicopter was really expensive.
How many takes did they need to do with the helicopter? How much do you think they paid Bradley Cooper?
Too much.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, Bradley, can you read these lines in front of a camera? Oh, yeah. You mean like acting? Like, no, we mean, can you read these lines? Like, yeah. All right.
Can you read these lines? And they slide him some lines of coke.
Yeah. And he's like, hey, I could read that. And then you got Dr. Seuss's The Grinch going at $11 million. And it's made so much money. Who even cares?
Who fucking cares?
Yeah, it's made more money than the Ron Howard Grinch. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, poor Jim Carrey.
Yeah. I mean, we'll just keep moving down the list because there's a surprise at the end. Ralph Breaks the Internet at $9.2 million. Pretty solid for a fourth place.
Yeah, so
up to $154 million.
It's officially broken even now. That movie had a $150 million budget.
It says $175 million
right
there.
Holy shit. So it hasn't broken even yet.
No, but I don't think this is not international, though, right?
Even internationally, like I feel like Disney was probably expecting more. So I think it's going to be another 6 years or so before we see Ralph again.
It did better than Moana.
Really?
Yeah. Damn, if you look at the that's like the showdown they're having on Box Office Mojo, the 27 day total. Oh, no, it's just barely behind Moana.
OK, I was going to say Moana had The Rock, man.
Yeah, some real box office drivers. Ralph Breaks the Internet. All these titles for these movies are awful. Ralph Breaks the Internet, 27-day total is $154.7 million, and the 27-day total for Moana is $165 million.
Wow.
So that's like a $11 million gap, which is not nearly as big as the $56 million gap between the first Fantastic Beasts and Crimes of Grindelwald.
Man, what a failure that movie was.
Yeah, it's a $50 million is a lot of people's salary. But yeah, and then number five, this is the really fun part. It's Mortal Engines in its opening weekend, making $7.5 million. Everyone who financed that movie is going to jail.
Yep, New Zealand jail. They're going to have to serve Peter Jackson indentured servitude for the rest of their lives.
Just think about this. Like, Ralph Breaks the Internet cost $75 million more dollars than Mortal Engines.
Yeah, that's crazy. But, I mean, hey, at least we know Disney's paying their animators.
Yeah, exactly.
So, that's good. But, okay, here's a quick note. And this also blows my mind because I saw Mortal Engines this weekend. Dan did not. Quick notes on this movie. It's fun, but it's straight up steampunk Star Wars. Like, beat for beat. I'm not even kidding. It is steampunk Star Wars, but I was there for it. But the point I wanted to make is this movie cost as much as Venom, and I don't know how the fuck a movie with $100 million budget can look as bad as Venom did. Meanwhile, a movie that looks as good as Mortal Engines costs the same amount. Like, I don't even think they actually shot in San Francisco for Venom, right? Like, that's just a model Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah, I do not think that they actually did that. But I think that probably Tom Hardy and Michelle Williams both got a lot of that money.
Why would you spend that much money on them?
Tom Hardy, because he's great, first of all.
Like, that's still, like, 10% of that budget. Like, Tom Hardy probably got $10 million, and I feel like that's being generous. Because, like Robert Downey Jr., I think, is on the record as being one of the highest, like, if not the highest paid movie actor of all time for the Avengers, and he got, like, $25 million or something for it.
But that was an ensemble cast, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I feel like if they're spending that much money, like, so those movies are pretty, like, effects heavy anyway. They have big budgets. They're, right, like, you know, globetrotting. They have many locations to shoot in. That's expensive shit.
Yeah. I'm saying that because Robert Downey Jr. for the Avengers was a part of a team where they have to pay all of these guys, like, a decent amount of money, where you don't have, like, some nobodies. Like, Riz Ahmed is a kind of somebody. Like, he does some TV work. Yeah. He's been in a Star Wars movie as a bit player. But they're not as famous as, you know, Chris Evans, who is already in a shit ton of movies. Mark Ruffalo.
Was not that big before the Avengers.
He was pretty big.
No, he was not. I did not know who Mark Ruffalo was before he was cast as the Hulk.
You're out of your
what
goddamn
movie was
mind.
He in before the Avengers?
He's in Zodiac.
He wasn't. Oh, so was Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, but barely. He was in 13 going on 30.
Was that a box office smash?
Yeah.
Do people remember him from 13 going on 30? What the fuck? No, hang on. What's that Zac Efron movie about? 13.
17 again?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I know what you're thinking, but
I'm not thinking right.
No. Yeah. All right. Let's see. Here's some Mark Ruffalo movies. Wind Talkers. He was in that.
Is that the Mel Gibson one?
No, it's Nicolas Cage.
Oh,
you're thinking,
shit.
You're thinking of We Were Soldiers.
I was thinking of We Were Soldiers.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. 13 Going on 30. He's in Collateral.
What the fuck did he play in Eternal Sunshine? I know Elijah Wood was in Eternal Sunshine.
He plays one of the scientists.
Oh, so he co-stars with Elijah Wood as one of the scientists?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He was in 13 Going on 30. He was in Collateral. He was in he was in Zodiac, Reservation Road.
Oh, he was one of the cops in Collateral. Fuck.
Where the Wild Things Are, the kids are all right.
But so he's always been a minor player in all these movies.
Shutter Island. Yeah, he's never been like a pretty consistent A man, but like a solid B man.
Yeah. I mean, I would
same
argue
with
that
all
he's
of the
still,
other of those people.
I would argue he's still not an A man.
He's in a lot of stuff, man.
Yeah, but never is like the lead.
Foxcatcher.
I'm just saying, Spotlight. I definitely think Steve Carell and Channing Tatum both got paid more. Also, Michael Keaton definitely got paid more in Spotlight.
Definitely. But I'm saying, never mind. The point is, well, you got one Ruffle, you got like four other dudes. Everyone's splitting the money. Besides the point, geez, wow, what a stupid tangent that was.
Hey, it's informative. Now, next time somebody's like, what else has Mark Ruffalo been in? You know.
Yeah. Oh, God. That's the darkest it's ever been on this podcast is me reading out Mark Ruffalo's filmography to prove that he's a real person.
He
was
a real
before
person.
The Avengers.
But I don't think Tom Hardy got paid that much to be in Venom. Like, I think he got a decent amount.
Oh, man. Yeah. Venom sucks. Holy shit. That was the conversation we were having.
Yeah, that was the conversation we're having because we're talking about how Venom looks like shit compared to Mortal Engines.
Definitely. And I think it's because Tom Hardy. Mm-hmm. I bet there's the rights, maybe. I don't know. Who? They got an Eminem song. I bet that was a few million bucks.
Yeah, how much you got to pay Eminem to write a fucking song for me? Oh, they had a Run the Jewels song, too.
Yeah, they did. You know, I don't know where the money went. I mean, I guess it also has like a main character who is all CGI.
Yeah, but like that's only like 20 minutes of footage, max.
Oh, I bet it was a lot more because I bet they filmed it pretty hardcore.
You think it was a 3-hour, 20-minute long cut originally?
No, but do you want to transition?
No, I'm not going to transition. I'm going to fuck you over right there.
Okay, cool. We'll go right into the highs and lows of the week. Starting with the high. Bao, the short Pixar film starring a Bao and its mother. Right? Mother?
Its mother, yes.
Yes. is free on YouTube right now because it got nominated for an Oscar for best short and animated short. So go watch it.
So are the nominations out now, or is it just the short lists?
It's the short list.
So it hasn't officially been...
I think it was for the Golden Globe then.
Oh, okay. I mean, I believe that too. I mean, I think it's going to be nominated for an Oscar, animated short.
Yeah.
Like, you're pretty safe in that presumption. But
yeah, there's definitely like an incentive to release your stuff for free on YouTube if you're like a short film person or like something where people are not going to watch it.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, I bet that people don't. They vote on the short film stuff and they're like, I haven't seen any of these. I'm going to vote just on the title.
Yeah. And also, like, if your movie, your short film is gaining traction or gaining popularity because of nominations like this, just fucking monetize it on YouTube like Pixar is doing.
Yeah, definitely. Vimeo, all of it.
Yeah.
Send me the link.
Yeah. When else are you going to watch it? Like, the only time I've ever seen the Oscar short films was at Ragtag back in Columbia, Missouri. Which was my college town, our college town.
I never went to college. I was born like this.
You were born a dad.
Yeah.
But yeah, they had a compilation of the live action and animated short films, and I saw it 1 year and was like, I don't know if I ever want to do that again. So
it was like not fun.
Not really. Like those were all films that I definitely would have just like watched on YouTube in my spare time as I'm falling asleep instead of paying like $15 to see in a theater.
Yeah, and it was like all of them right at once.
Yeah.
Who's watching short films anyway? Like who? I know some people are probably like, here are the short films you have to see.
Yeah, and there's
like,
definitely a circle for it.
Yeah, it's yeah. Circle is one word. Yeah.
Yeah. Starring Tom Hanks and Emma Watson.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I don't know. That's not my bag really. But it's YouTube and it's Pixar. So if you didn't get to see like a Pixar movie, you're like, oh, I hear they still had like a short. I feel like it was pretty well talked about.
Oh yeah.
So
it's definitely worth watching. Go watch it. It's free. You probably have to watch like one ad, but it's still free and it's definitely worth watching because it's so heartfelt and it's a little disturbing, but the message is there.
Yeah, and the director of that has already gotten her own Pixar movie.
Yeah.
So there you go. See, history in the making. And let's go to the low of the week, which is the fact that we talked about Mortal Engines box office is so low that there's no way they're going to make a franchise out of this.
Not
immediately
a chance.
Shot down.
I don't know why. So this movie on a budget of $100 million, not even including marketing, made $7.5 million at the box office this weekend. This is a dead franchise. This franchise is dead on arrival. I think most people predicted it just from the trailers. Like, one, it looked way too ambitious, and it was releasing with such high competition this weekend. I don't know. I mean, they should have really just pulled an Alita Battle Angel and moved it to, like, February or March of next year.
Do you think it would have done well? Because it's not like getting anything for word of
mouth. I don't
know
if it would have done well. Because like the movie's still like, again, it's steampunk Star Wars. There's nothing new to see here, at least not narratively. Uh-huh. It's all aesthetic, which I think it's still worth seeing. It's a fun movie. I had a good time with it. But word of mouth is not going to carry this movie. Peter Jackson's name clearly isn't going to carry this movie.
Yeah, do people even care who Peter Jackson is anymore? I feel like...
No, because he ruined his name with The
Hobbit.
Yeah, he released The Hobbit trilogy, and people were like, oh, this kind of sucks. Like, maybe he struck gold with the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and people aren't going to get... And then he did the Lovely Bones after that, and nobody gave a shit about that either.
Oh, yeah, what a
bad movie.
Totally, it's just not noteworthy at all. It's a movie.
But I think it would have at least done better, like in February. Like, it's a big budget movie when there aren't many other big budget films coming out. Like, Alita kind of has taken that spot now. And I think Alita is going to do okay in February because I think people like seeing big budget films, but
they love anime live action movies.
Yeah. I will say this: Mortal Engines, better than Avatar.
Really?
Yeah. And like the reason I make that comparison is because they are both movies that ride entirely on their technology and aesthetic design. And I think Mortal Engines is more creative, but they're both like equally derivative.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Mortal Engines. If you get a chance, I say see it in IMAX. even if it's just for that opening scene where London fucking swallows another city, like that's the, I am so there for that, man. I'm such a steampunk fucking kid. I love this shit. It is so much fun.
Yeah, so if you're not a steampunk kid like Robert, probably don't see it.
Yeah, you can
definitely
pass on it.
But I'm
going
to see it just to spite Robert, yeah.
Yeah, you just need to see it so we can talk about it.
God, IMAX is so expensive.
Yeah.
And I see, there's so many movies I have to see too. Like,
but how many of them do you have to see in IMAX?
None. The last movie I saw in IMAX was Mission Impossible 6, Fallout. And it was amazing.
That was good, but they didn't film it in IMAX.
They didn't? Oh, yeah, they filmed it on film.
Yeah, they adapted it to IMAX. I'm trying to think what the last film I actually saw in IMAX was, and I feel like it was Interstellar, which was like
really?
4 years ago.
That far back?
Oh, no, I saw... Did they film Blade Runner in IMAX? I don't remember.
Yeah, they did.
Okay,
I saw
Blade Runner in IMAX.
I think I saw Blade Runner in IMAX, too.
Totally
but I'm
worth
not
it.
Sure.
I do not regret yeah. a single cent of the $17 I spent on that IMAX ticket.
Oh, yeah. Very, very nice. Well, so see this in IMAX if you want or don't. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know
any
other IMAX movies.
You're not going to save the movie. Don't worry. It's it's dead, you know?
If yeah, you they should just let me see it for free, yeah.
And it's not like it's going to have a back in theaters 10 years later release either. So if you're interested in this movie at all, see it now because this is a dead franchise.
Yeah, it's all downhill.
Yeah.
Downhill for
say
here.
Say your goodbyes.
Mm-hmm. All right, and then our toss-up of the week is that Glass, the M. Night Shyamalan trilogy capper, whatever, the third movie in the trilogy.
Oh, yeah.
The first cut was 3 hours and 20 minutes long, which, holy moly.
Release the Snyder cut.
You are an absolute madman. I don't even know what to make because I still haven't seen Split.
You haven't? Have you seen Unbreakable at least?
Yeah, I've seen Unbreakable.
Go watch Unbreakable again.
Okay.
And then watch Split. And then watch Glass. Because I'm hyped as fuck. But okay,
think
so
about,
the, I feel like, do we know the final running time of this film?
No, I don't think so.
It's probably going to be like, what, 2 hours? I feel like 3 hours, 20 minutes is not that egregious. Because I hear most initial cuts of films are like 4 hours plus.
They're usually pretty. Oh, so the running time of Glass is 2 hours and 8 minutes.
Okay. So, yeah, they cut like an hour 20 out of it. I feel like that's pretty standard for a film. If anything, I feel like the first cut is under the average running time of most films.
What do you mean?
So most films have like an initial cut of like 4 hours.
Oh, yeah. 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 So it'll be a lot short. I think you're right. I think most of the initial cuts are real long because they're like, all right, here's the thing. It's like, all right, now let's make this work as a movie that people will see.
Yeah, exactly. Because they're not Zack Snyder. But they.
Yeah, no one's seen a 3.5 hour long movie. If it's not The Godfather or her.
Dude, tons of people like Watchmen. But I think this movie is going to be fine. I feel like, I don't know, a lot of news sites like Screen Rant, I think, is the one that really broke the story. And they're like, oh, man, they cut so much out of this movie to appease the studio. I'm like, no, dude, this is every fucking movie. Every fucking movie goes through cuts. Every movie is initially 4 hours long because they have a shit ton of B-roll and just a ton of.
So much footage.
Yeah. So much footage. They got to cut it. This is not anything to be worried about. I don't know why people are making a big deal out of this.
Yeah, and there's very few moments when I've seen like a really long movie and be like, yeah, that needed to be that long.
Yeah, I'm trying
or,
to think.
Like, I've never seen a longer version of a movie and been like, yeah, that was super, that make or breaks the movie. Like even, I'd say one of the better extended cuts is
Batman
Apocalypse
versus
Now.
Superman.
No, it's not Batman or Superman. It's a.
Oh my god!
It's a Apocalypse Now that adds like a whole other storyline.
See, I actually prefer the theatrical cut of.
I know
Apocalypse
a lot of
Now.
People do, but that's I think that's like the most famous of the extended like cuts. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think there's that. There's Blade Runner, and then there's Kingdom of Heaven, And I would say Kingdom of Heaven is probably the most deserving of the extended cut. But the thing with extended cuts, too, is like it's not only extended, like they re-edit, they resequence the entire movie so that it makes more sense. Like Kingdom of Heaven, the director's cut, is actually good. But
really,
the initial theatrical cut of Kingdom of Heaven is trash. It's like, you know, the theatrical version of Batman vs. Superman levels of incoherent. But, you know, Ridley Scott, I think, is he's one of those directors that doesn't know how to compromise. And in that sense, he's like Zack Snyder. But
yeah,
I would love to see a director's cut of like either Prometheus or Alien Covenant. I think that'd be super fun because I just want to know what he had to cut out of the first drafts of those films.
I think he just hates, I think he's very uncompromising and just like, oh, this is what people said about it. Like, well, I don't care. Like, this is what we should release. And the studio's like, no, please, let's make this into a small. Yeah. I think he probably just doesn't collaborate with it. It's just like, fine, fuck it up.
Yeah.
Do with it what you will. Yeah. So, yeah, overall, I gotta watch that, The Kingdom of Heaven directed or extended director's cut. But for this first cut of Glass being 3 hours and 20 minutes long, I think it means just that there's a lot there.
Yeah.
And hopefully we get the most coherent vision of the film.
Yeah. And I think, you know, M. Night Shyamalan this is his pet project. And like, it's been his baby ever since like 2003 when Unbreakable came out, because apparently he wrote these scripts all like within 6 months of each other. Like he had this entire vision planned out as soon as Unbreakable came out, but he was just, you know, pulled away to other projects. So when Split came out and then the news came out that he was doing a sequel to Split and Unbreakable, I think everybody started getting hyped again because people are starting to get back on the M. Night Shyamalan train, because Split is actually really good. And like, I think half of it is due to Shyamalan's direction, because it's very skillfully directed, but the other half is due to James McAvoy's performance, because it is legendary. And I think it's kind of egregious that he didn't get any sort of attention for his performance that he gave in Split. Like, it's so good. I can't even talk about it because you haven't seen it yet. But once you see it, we should talk about it a little bit more.
Definitely.
See it before Glass comes out. You need to.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'll see it in the next few days, I bet.
Yeah. I do feel sad, though, that you're not going to get the surprise twist at the end.
Yeah, just that it's a sequel to Unbreakable.
Yeah, that was that's the best twist of like the decade. Like I lost my fucking mind.
I keep missing all of the Shyamalan twists. I miss Sixth Sense. I miss this.
You just gotta see more movies in theaters, man.
You're right. I see the least amount of movies in theaters of anyone I've ever met. I hardly ever go to the movies. Jesus Christ. Let's get to the two movies we saw in theaters this week, Robert. Let's start talking about them. Which one do you want to do first? I think
Let's cover The Mule first.
Yeah, let's do The Mule first. So The Mule, starring Clint Eastwood, directed by Clint Eastwood. It's also starring Bradley Cooper, Michael Peña, other people.
That's about it.
Whatever. Yeah.
And the girl from The Nun. What's her name?
Something Farmiga.
Yeah.
Anna Farmiga.
Yeah. Vera Farmiga's little sister.
Yeah. Something like that. I mean, that's her sister, but beside the point. And Andy Garcia is that drug cartel dude.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just getting put on a little bit of poundage, but he's still looking good.
It's for the role.
Yeah, definitely. Isn't everything for the role. But so this movie is about an old man who loves flowers and then becomes a courier, a mule, some might say.
Yeah, it's a bit of a jump.
Yeah. For the Mexican drug cartels, because he meets a Hispanic guy at a wedding party, and of course he knows cartel people.
Yeah, I can't believe that's how they actually introduced it. But here's the thing. So this movie is based on actual events.
New York Times article, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, I didn't read the article.
I read it, so
is that how he actually is that how he actually got involved with the cartel?
He won't say anything.
Really?
He pleaded guilty, and they wouldn't let the reporter talk to him.
Damn, so he's no snitch.
Yeah.
Fucking
snitches get stitches.
Yeah, fucking badass, man.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I would recommend everybody go read the article because it's more interesting than this movie, which is not about a drug mule. It's about an old guy who just fucks up his life and just keeps trying to tell other people not to fuck up their life.
Yeah.
That's like, really what the story is about.
That's what I got from this movie is like it made its point within the first like 15 minutes. Like his first monologue is the same monologue he gives like three times throughout the entire movie where he's like,
don't be like I am.
Yeah. Don't be like me, you know, spend more time with your family.
That's what's really important.
It's like, and we got it. There's no nuance in this film. And like, to be fair, it's not like Clint Eastwood is somebody who's renowned for his nuanced takes on social issues, which is also pretty clearly evidenced in this film. but yeah, man, this movie's weird. Like, I appreciated it, and I still smiled during it because Clint Eastwood is a fucking legend. Like, he directed this movie. He's like 90 years old and like he's still acting in this movie. He's like legitimately giving a performance. He's not just like gliding through. Like, this isn't just like an Adam Sandler wish fulfillment movie. This isn't his retirement.
Yeah,
like he's giving it what he's got.
It's just the movie was very poorly marketed. I think
there's that. Like, they definitely they took all the tensest scenes and put them into the trailer.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is like this. So it kind of threw me for a loop because Clint Eastwood directed American Sniper, and say what you will about that movie, but there are some legitimately tense scenes in that film.
Definitely.
This movie has like none of that. Like
no tense scenes. Yeah.
The scene that I really thought was going to get me was like, I think the first trailer they put out where he's like, he sees the drugs in the back of his truck and then the cop shows up behind him.
Right.
But that scene in the movie plays out like, it's like a fucking, it's almost like a joke.
Yeah.
There's no tension. He rubs some fucking, spoiler alert for the movie, he rubs some fucking Bengay on his hands and puts it on the dog's nose, like, and then the cop just leaves. And I think that the scene in the trailer was actually longer than the scene in the movie.
Yeah, no, the scene in the movie, they really breezed through it, and you kind of know, like, I wonder if they, because he seemed more panicked in the trailer, too.
Yeah. So I wonder if they just recut it or if they had different takes that they just used for the trailer footage.
Yeah, I think there was some takes that I saw in the trailer of him looking more like panicked and like worried.
Yeah.
In some of the shots that were taken out.
Which is a bummer. Because like Clint Eastwood is still an actor. Like, he can do it. So I don't know.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know why he decided to take those takes out of the movie.
Yeah, I think that he was trying to make a different movie than we all were expecting him to make.
Yeah.
About a really old, it was more of like, why would somebody be a drug cartel? Like,
they don't really explain why either, though. Like,
it's like, hey, you want to drive some stuff? And he's like, yeah, I can drive. Like, I need somewhere to live.
Yeah. I do like how fucking just like, how like cavalier he is about the whole thing. He's just like, of course, yeah, I can drive. I'm good at driving. I've never gotten into. I like how that's the first thing he says to the Mexican dude at the fucking wedding too. He's like,
yeah,
I love this truck. I never got a ticket on this truck. My truck is completely clean. I am the perfect drug mule. Like,
and he's like, really? Because I am Hispanic and therefore no cartel members.
Yeah, man,
who need a driver?
The dialogue in this movie is so fucking stilted. Like.
Yeah, you can tell because Clint Eastwood, if you don't know, everybody, Clint Eastwood has this thing where he does not like to rehearse. It's like you show up and you do the scenes.
You get more honest performances that way.
Yeah. And I think you can tell that a lot of this was the first time it was coming out of a lot of these people's mouths. Like the first time that they were doing it and they just took that take. It's like, oh, they're just like breezing through this movie. There's a whole part of this movie that basically takes place in a soundstage office that's dressed up to be like Chicago. They have like one exterior shot of Chicago.
Yeah, this ain't Widows.
Definitely not. It's this movie's just it didn't do it for me. It made me laugh. It's like surprisingly funny. And if you view it more as like a folksy old guy gets involved with some like cartel people, it seems like a Lifetime movie almost.
Right.
Like it doesn't seem like a movie that would get made into I understand why the marketing of this movie was so weird, because the tone of it is all over the place. It can't tell. It doesn't know if it wants to be like a family drama or like a kind of a goofy comedy, or like a mafia, like cartel movie, like, or a DEA, like cop movie. It's jumping around all these different things. And the really the best thing it does is the folksy old guy stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think Clint Eastwood's performance is the best part of this movie, because like anytime he's on screen and whenever he's like, I love watching him interact with the cartel members, because he is just like, he's so chill about it.
Like, he's like, kill me, I don't care.
Yeah, he's like, I've seen combat. You don't fucking scare me. Like, But he's also just like, when he's not interacting with the cartel members and he's just talking with like the other old folks that he hangs out with in his social life, it's the same thing. He's just the super chill guy who's like, he's like, yeah, I smuggle drugs. Who gives a shit? Like, I'm just trying to, like, I'm gonna die in like 9 years anyway. Like,
What a strange movie. The ass montage. Very weird.
Yeah. Some good asses, some bad asses. I wonder who was the ass curator of that sequence.
Yeah, I was like, man, this is a real weird, like, oh, they're doing a scene where they're dancing. Oh, okay. They're really focusing on that butt. Oh, they're going to another butt.
Yeah. It's like,
oh, they're going to another butt. Oh, wow. This is an ass montage.
Yeah, it's like, oh, shit. That's Clint Eastwood eating out his own ass. Oh, fuck. How's he that flexible?
Definitely the best part of the movie.
There were some moments that definitely felt just like, I don't want to say wish fulfillment, because I'm sure that Clint Eastwood has had even more extravagant experiences than we've seen in the movie. But I couldn't stop laughing at the scenes when like he's at the drug dealer's party, like at his house. And they're just like a shit ton of naked women, just like a different woman walking into his room every time. And he's like fucking shirtless laying on the bed. Like,
yeah. And it's like, interesting, because I read the article and that's not really in it. Like that's
Clint Eastwood's decision. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, I know how we're going to do this. Get all the beautiful ladies.
Yeah, I get it. Like, I guess I can see how this movie costs $50 million now. Like,
yeah.
Hookers and cocaine.
Right. Yeah, exactly. What a strange movie that I was really excited for. And I wasn't necessarily disappointed, but I was like, because immediately it told you this is not the movie that you think it is. And I was like, oh, OK. And then by like halfway through, I'm like, I guess I'm on board with this other version of this movie. And it's not necessarily a bad movie.
Yeah,
I think I was just disappointed because like went in expecting something completely different, when this is more like about Schmidt than it is like. Goodfellas.
I definitely think that marketing of this film is to fault. And like, I wonder how much input Clint Eastwood had on it, because even the poster for the film looks so much more somber than the film actually is. Yeah. And that's not to say there isn't drama in this film. I think there are good scenes, but the most dramatic scenes in this film are familial scenes. Anytime he's definitely with his family and they're like, they get on his case a lot about like not being there. But it's the biggest problem with this film is they characterize Clint Eastwood's character. I don't remember his fucking name, but I'm just going to call him Clint Eastwood.
Earl Stone.
Was it really Earl Stone?
I don't know why I said it, but it came as soon as it came out. I think it sounded awful, but I think that his name is.
I mean,
a lot
I
like
believe
that.
It. I would believe
Earl Stone. Yeah,
yeah,
that's
I believe
his name.
That his character's name is Earl Stone in this film.
Oh, man.
But yeah, so like everything you know about this character, like you don't really see much characterization beyond like him just fucking around with like the cartel members and like just not taking any shit from them. But all the like all the most important dynamics in this film are, I think, the familial dynamics. But you don't really see any of that. Like all you hear is like, oh, he wasn't there for this. He wasn't there for that. He wasn't there for this. Like, fucking show me. Like, show me him being a shitty father. Like, don't just say like, oh, he was like gardening something. Like
Robert, the very first scene in the movie is him missing his daughter's wedding to be at some flower convention. That's like the most insane scene ever.
That
it's him being the like, if you can tell, like how I feel like that loaded so much into the entire movie. It's like, oh man, this is the worst guy ever.
That was the only thing they showed, though, because everything else he was there for.
Yeah.
Like all of his granddaughter, all the stuff with his granddaughter and his dying wife, everything else he was there for.
Oh, yeah. Because he was trying to do better.
I mean, he was doing better.
Oh, yeah, but you have to assume that that was, like, the last straw for, like, so many of the other people. It's like, oh, you did this, like, no, this is awful. And that's why nobody wants to, like, talk to him.
He helped out the VFW, I think. What is that called?
VFW. Yeah, we're like, man, if only we get some more money around here. He's immediately like, cut to the next
right?
run.
Yeah.
He's like, well, I got to do that.
Cut and then to 12th, like, run. Yeah.
Yeah. Which he in the article, he did this over, like, 10 years.
Yeah, I believe it. I mean, yeah, he did it for a while in the movie.
Yeah, not like 10 years, though. I felt like he did it for like 1 year.
I feel like it felt like he did it for 1 year because they never really like set in stone what the time frame was that all this was happening. But I feel like he wasn't doing 12 runs a year. I feel like it was more like he would call them every 6 months or so. Just whenever he needed money.
I can't really remember. Everyone should read the article. That's the moral of the story. I wouldn't see this movie in the theaters. I would see it
on Lifetime.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I wouldn't even like see if it's on TV. This is really, you can kind of miss this one.
Yeah, I do hope that this isn't Clint Eastwood's last film.
Me too.
As soon as I walked out of the theater, though, I was like, dude, I want to go watch Unforgiven. Like, I think that's Clint Eastwood's last great film. Like, say
what about Miss Mystic River?
Did Mystic River come out after Gran Torino? I mean, not Gran Torino.
You just said
Unforgiven.
The Unforgiven.
Sorry, Unforgiven. Yeah. Not Gran Torino is kind of a shitty movie.
Gran Torino is also like The Mule in that it's better if you take it as a comedy.
This is true. And also, they both have some real shit actors in them.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah,
man. And that's another thing about this movie is like there are so many like narrative threads that are just left dangling. Like the whole thing with when they introduce his cartel handler, I was like, is this going to go somewhere? And it didn't.
Yeah, it's like, oh, no.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. You had the guy from Westworld playing like a cartel hand member. He was like a fucking henchman at some point. And I'm like, all right. I mean, I guess that's going to, it kind of went somewhere, but not really.
kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. After Unforgiven, he did Mystic River, Million Dollar Baby, Letters from Iwo Jima. He did Mystic River, Million Dollar Baby, and Letters from Iwo Jima in like 3 years.
Okay. So he directed those. I guess I was talking about acting wise.
Oh, okay.
Because I know he wasn't in Mystic River.
Right.
Million Dollar Baby is good, but I think Unforgiven is a better film.
Definitely.
And then Letters from Iwo Jima and Flags from Our Fathers. I mean, I love those films. I adore those films, but he didn't star in them.
Yeah. I feel you. All right. So overall, we're kind of giving it a pass. Just say, we saw it, so you didn't have to.
Yeah, just wait. It's going to be on HBO soon or Lifetime or Netflix or something. It'll be on some streaming service. Check it out there. This isn't a movie you really have to see in theaters. You can kind of watch it in the background.
Agreed. But let's get to our next movie, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I'm so good at transitions. This one is so starring, we got Sameek Moore, right? Isn't that his name? I just pulled that out of thin air. You've got Jake Johnson from
New Girl.
There you go.
And The Mummy starring Tom Cruise.
Yeah, who is he really in that movie?
Yeah. Oh, I forgot you never saw that. I mean, good on you for not seeing that. But rest in peace, Dark Universe.
Right, R.I.P. who else is Haley Steinfeld?
Haley Steinfeld, Nicolas Cage.
Chris Pine,
John Mulaney.
John Mulaney also, yeah.
Yeah.
So really a stacked cast.
Quite. Also Mahershala Ali. And the guy that plays
Ryan
Paperboy.
Tyree Henry.
Yeah, that guy. Paperboy.
Lily Tomlin is Aunt May.
I don't know who Lily Tomlin is.
She's an actress.
I mean, I gathered that much.
Yeah. And Zoe Kravitz is Mary Jane Watson. It's got so many people.
Yeah, this is a stacked cast.
Yeah. And then Liev Schreiber as Wilson Fisk.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to Liev Schreiber, man.
What a great voice.
Right?
Best part of Hard Knocks. So, initial thoughts, this is a really good movie. It's really funny and it's heartfelt and the action is good. It really redefines how we think about Spider-Man in a really good way. And I would be totally fine if all of the Spider-Man movies from here on out were this based on this franchise. Yeah,
dude, I love this movie. I can't, like, after the movie, I was trying to think of like any criticisms that I had of this film, and I legit don't think I can think of any, because this movie, one, it's aesthetically gorgeous. Like, it, I think it breaks new ground within the animation realm. Just its style.
The animation's amazing.
The animation is amazing. The soundtrack is amazing. The performances are all great. The story is super, it's emotional, it's thrilling, and it's subversive all at the same time. Shout out to Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who also wrote and directed the Lego movie.
I think
this is, oh, and 21 Jump Street. I always forget that they did 21 Jump Street. but I think this is their best film by far. They didn't direct it, but they wrote it, and it's fucking great. Which it also makes me really sad that we didn't get to see their solo film, because
definitely,
God damn, man. Like, Ron Howard, you're cool. You make some really good movies. You also make some shitty movies. I think Solo's on like the better half of that spectrum.
Yeah.
But man, I wish we could have seen the Chris Lord and Phil Lord and Chris Miller version of Solo. I think that would have been so cool.
Yeah, we can tell like from this. Oh, it's so great.
Yeah. This, oh my God, I can't even tell, like, I don't want to spoil anything about this movie either, because I think to a lot of like casual Spider-Man fans, the events of this film will be surprising. Like, I was surprised as a Spider-Man fan, as someone who knows like the origin of Miles Morales, and it's not exactly the same. It's not like comic accurate. I think that his origins in the comics are actually a lot darker, but mm-hmm. I'm surprised at how true to the source material they still stuck to in this film. That's still... Also, this film is only like PG, and it's like, it's weird to say, but it's like a hard PG. Like, there's some dark shit.
A lot of dark stuff is going on in this movie. And it's also like at the same time funny, but heartfelt. Its style of humor is so based on character, and so much like, oh, what's going on? Like, Noir Spider-Man is hilarious.
So Nick Cage. Nicolas Cage as Spider-Man
Noir.
I'm going to
take this back.
Is amazing.
This weird tool.
Yeah, like there's so many different types of humor in this film. I think like the one of the things that I think this film does really well is it gets humor out of like sudden shifts in perspective. Because and it's something that not a lot of other Spider-Man not a lot of other superhero films really do in general, but I think they should, because I think Phil Lord and Chris Miller know how ridiculous superheroes as a premise are.
Yes.
So if you were to see superhero shit happening just from a bystander's perspective, that could be either terrifying or hilarious. And I think that this movie kind of plays to both sides of that. And just like the sudden shifts in perspective in this film are hilarious, especially in the sequence when Miles is like learning to like control his spider powers. Those are great. Those are amazing. But you also get a lot of humor from like introducing all these different types of spider people. I'm not going to say Spider-Man, because there's obviously spider women in this universe. Well, in the multiverse as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the whole thing with Spider-Man Noir and how like he's stylized in black and white, so we can only see in black and white, and all the Rubik's cubes jokes in that movie are hilarious. When he's trying to solve this puzzle and he's like, this is all purple. Like it's a purple cube. What am I doing?
it's great. It's funny. Dramatic. I feel like I'm just saying the same thing, cause I don't want to like spoil anything, but I'll say Jake Johnson as his older, more washed up Spider-Man is a highlight for me.
Mm-hmm.
Redefining the Spider-Man we know in that way of like, oh, this guy doesn't like stop becoming a down on his luck loser when he's like 29 or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I'd say Jake Johnson's Spider-Man is in his late 20s, maybe like 30. So that his body's getting a little bit more banged up. He's putting on a few pounds. His relationships are in turmoil. I like that perspective, and it makes a good like mentorship to Miles. I mean, like, hey, I was Spider-Man once.
Yeah.
You could be too. It seems very much like an older Batman, like Batman Beyond type.
Hear me out.
okay, I don't like where this is going.
This movie is The Last Jedi.
I get what you're saying, but you're completely wrong. But continue.
I mean, tell me why I'm wrong.
That's not how this is going to work. That's not-
So, I mean, okay, this is me just kind of harping on Last Jedi haters, because if you don't like The Last Jedi, you just have terrible taste.
Yeah.
But if you like this version of Spider-Man, this like broken, non-motivated version of Spider-Man, I don't know why you are upset with Luke Skywalker being a broken, like faulty hero in The Last Jedi.
Same character arc is what you're saying.
It's the same emotional character arc, yes.
Is it arguably like more extreme in Last Jedi?
A little bit, sure. But like, yeah.
But in both, like what causes it and how it's played out in this, it's a little like, it's still pretty depressing, but it's like, I think your
Luke is more worthy of, like, he's earned his position as like the grumpy old sage more so in The Last Jedi than Peter Parker Definitely. Has in this film. Yeah. Oh, you broke up with Mary Jane. So sad. So sad, yeah. Dude.
Too I bad guess your that, nephew yeah. didn't try and murder you.
You're right, yeah. I guess that means you get to quit being a superhero.
Yeah, and it's so good because it takes advantage of all the great things about Spider-Man, on how it's really a sacrifice for Spider-Man to be Spider-Man. Like Clark Kent, Bruce Wayne, Clark Kent's, he's God. Who cares? Next question.
Yeah, Zack Snyder is the only one that has made Superman emotionally compelling.
Yeah, and barely.
Hey, man, we'll talk about this afterwards.
Hey, doggy boy. No way, Jose. Stop interrupting me. I keep getting completely off track. Batman is rich, etc. Nobody has to sacrifice anything. Captain America is literally a subject of the government, and he loves that.
He sacrificed his love.
Tony, whatever. He didn't.
Yeah,
he was frozen. Frozen in time.
Yeah, but
it was
his
an
love
accident.
Still died.
Yeah, he didn't choose that. Whatever.
He thought he was going to die, man. He didn't choose to be frozen.
Yeah, he's doing great. Tony Stark, rich, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You get Spider-Man, who has to deal with all of his regular stuff and still be Spider-Man. He's choosing, like, oh, you know how everyone wants to go, you know, get dinner or whatever. Everyone wants to go hang out. Like, nah, Spider-Man's got to be Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And this movie accomplishes that so well across so many different characters.
Yeah.
And it also has the best post-credit scene in any Marvel movie ever.
Yeah, the post-credit scene is worth seeing this movie alone. Like,
yeah.
That was something. I was not expecting that at all, but it's so fucking good. Also, dude, that was Oscar Isaac.
Yeah, no, what a great acting cast.
Dude, I'm so glad that Sony put as much money as they did into this film. Like, you know what? Sony Animation, fuck you still for making the Emoji Movie, but this is a pretty good, this is a good apology. Like, this is a real good apology. So,
the Emoji Movie funded this movie.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
This movie doesn't exist without...
Without TJ Miller.
Yeah.
Without TJ Miller's sacrifice.
R.I.P. So, but yeah, what a great movie. This is one of my,
This is in my top five. This is in top five of the year for me. Easy.
I'm trying to think. This might be like better than Incredibles 2.
I would argue it's better than Incredibles 2. I love Incredibles 2. That's still in my top 10. I don't know if top five. But I think this movie just like it had the emotional weight of the Incredibles 2. I think maybe even more so than the Incredibles 2. Because uh-huh. I think that I think what I liked more about this film is, one, I love these characters. Like, there's so much source material and so much mythos to these characters that I'm clearly biased towards it. But I also think the villain, like, Kingpin as the villain, and when you learn, like, what his motivations are for creating this, like, hyper collider, they're sympathetic. And you're like, oh, man, I kind of feel for Kingpin right now.
Yeah.
And, like, I didn't give a shit about the villain in Incredibles 2. I was like, oh, okay, this is some, like, 1930s B-movie bullshit. Like, but it's still fun.
Much more like a monster of the week.
Yeah. But man, Spider-Verse, dude, Spider-Verse is so good. And like, I want to really get into it at some point, but I can't because, you know, as the box office shows, enough people saw it. 35 million is not bad, but I think more people should have seen it. Like, I wish this movie had the opening of like a standard Marvel. I wish this movie had the opening of fucking Venom. Like,
yeah.
And I think just talking with like my coworkers, I feel like a lot of people kind of assumed that this is just like, oh, this is like kids' version of Spider-Man, which is one stupid. It's a stupid thought to have because like all Spider-Man are kids' version of Spider-Man. It's a fucking comic book. But this movie is so much more mature. Like, I think this movie you could argue is more mature than like Spider-Man Homecoming.
Definitely. I like it more.
Yeah.
Than Spider-Man. I think it's better than, I think it's the second best Spider-Man movie.
I think this is, see,
and not by a lot, like it's close.
It's like, okay, I love Spider-Man 2. Spider-Man 2 is great. Sam Raimi's direction is amazing. Alfred Molina as Doc Ock is fantastic. But I feel like you could make the argument for this being the best Spider-Man film.
Oh yeah, I think you could. This is really great in new ways for a franchise that's been rebooted like three times in the last 10 years.
Right.
This stands out.
Also, this is the first time that we've actually seen like the Marvel multiverse in film, which right. is super fucking cool. Like, I never thought that's a concept we'd see in film. To be fair, I never thought that the Infinity Gauntlet was a concept that we would see in film either. But I hope Marvel takes notes from this film's success and hopefully continued success, and learns that like, oh, audiences are okay with like parallel universes and like multiple versions of a character in film.
People are more savvy, I think. And
oh, for sure.
And I think that's one great thing that the Avengers have done is introduced more superhero concepts to the general public and proven like, oh yeah, people will eat it up. Like, they're into it. They get how it works.
Yeah.
Let's get weird.
Yeah. Also, man, dude, shout out to the fucking soundtrack on this movie.
Great soundtrack.
So good. Like, not only orchestral, but all the licensed stuff and like original songs that were written for this film. And like, so Post Malone, not a huge Post Malone fan. Some of the songs are okay. The song that he wrote for this movie, Sunflower, totally works. I feel like it might be my favorite Post Malone song that he's put out. And it might be because it's attached to this film. But I like it a lot.
Yeah, no, it's everything about this movie is good. Go see the movie. That's my final thought, really, is go to the theater and see this movie. It's worth it. It'll be fun. Even if you're not super into Spider-Man, it'll give you all the information that you need to know.
Exactly. And like, it does it in a humorous way, too, because it knows that Spider-Man is just part of the American like cultural consciousness. So it kind of pokes fun at like, you know, this shit, man. Like, we don't have to tell you what happened to Spider-Man. We only got to tell you that he was bitten by a radioactive spider. But they have fun with it when they start giving the backstories to like all the other multiversal Spider-Man that come in. And I feel like people are into seeing like, oh, so that's how like that went down in that universe. Like, oh, that's kind of different. And I really hope that this movie launches a franchise of exploring the other spider people in their universe, because each one of these characters has their own comic line and they all have their own stories and they're all worth reading because they're all pretty fucking cool. I would say read first. Like, a lot of people are going to say like, oh, Spider-Gwen is the best. People love Spider-Gwen. Yeah. She's cool. Read Spider-Man Noir. Spider-Man Noir is badass as fuck. And he's in the comics. I'll say this. He's a lot darker in the comics than he was in this movie because he's not voiced by Nicolas Cage in the comics.
Oh yeah. Wouldn't that be amazing though?
Oh my God. It'd be so good.
Nicolas Cage for Spider-Man. That's the final thought, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And go see the movie.
Yeah. Great film. 10 out of 10. I really don't have anything bad to say about it. Like, see it in IMAX, see it in 3D. Get that premium ticket. Spend that bread, boy.
Yeah, I wish I had seen it in 3D.
I think I might try to see it in 3D because I'm definitely seeing this movie again. Like, I wanted to watch it again as soon as it was over. I fucking loved it.
True, great movie-going experience.
Yeah. I hope it gets nominated for Best Picture. Like, if Toy Story 3 can get nominated for Best Picture, I think this should qualify for Best Picture, too.
This is better than Toy Story 3.
I would agree.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's wrap this bad boy up. Robert, what are we going to see next week? Aquaman?
Yeah, we seen Aquaman, and we also seen, there's another movie coming out next weekend.
Yeah, Welcome to Marwen. I know what you're saying. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. No, we got to see Aquaman. We got to see Bumblebee.
Yeah, yeah, we do.
The horse girl movie with robots.
Yeah, the horse girl movie, but this time the horse is a robot. I really want to know what the ratings for Welcome to Marwen are, because they haven't, the review embargo has not been lifted.
Oh, it's going
to
be bad, man.
It's got to be bad. It looks like hot trash.
Yeah. Poor Steve Carell.
Yeah. He looks like he's given it his all.
Mm-hmm. I think he always does. But hey, man, he's not the director.
Yeah. You can't win them all. Alrighty. Well, I've been Dan Leo. You know me as the A-host. You can follow me on Twitter at the Dan Leo Show. Follow our podcast at Viewing Angles. Check out the website, viewingangles.podcast.com, where we have merchandise. Good soft shirts.
And a hard
great
mugs.
Yeah.
Soft the, shirts,
the mugs
hard
are actually
mugs.
Cool. Yeah. It's a great it's a service. It's not that expensive. The service that does it ships it to you in a pretty reasonable time.
Yeah. And they it's make good. For great Christmas gifts.
Yes. For everybody, including your dog.
Yeah. If your dad is an alcoholic, this is a perfect mug to, like, you know, get him to pour whiskey in.
Right. Yeah. So he can pretend like he's drinking coffee.
Exactly.
Robert, who are you? What's your deal?
Who am I? My name is Robert Mecki. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram and Letterboxd at Robert Jr. Jr. Buy our shit.
Yeah. Well, it's been fun hanging out with y'all. And we'll see you next week.
Yeah, after you see Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, tweet your thoughts at Brian Williams at MSNBC. I don't know what his Twitter handle is. He's filed a restraining order against me. All right, well, we'll catch you all next week on that note.
Bye.